Hello, I'm Jane Crowther and welcome to the subscriber version of Inside Total Film. And thanks for being a subscriber, we really appreciate it. Today, I'm joined by our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
And our contributing editor, James Mottram.
Hello.
Hello. So this week, we'll be weighing up Parallel Mothers, Amulet, Sing 2, Flag Day, and Taming the Garden, which isn't about what you might think it is if you've got a dirty mind, like I did when I saw that title. But before we get on to them, what have you guys been watching? What have you guys been watching apart from those? Because that's quite a lot to get through. Have you been watching anything else? Been watching Sex and the City?
Just watching stuff for next week as well.
Yes. I'm sorry, Matthew, you've got the double header. What have you been watching, James?
I have actually caught up with two films that came out a year ago in the middle of like the third lockdown, I think it was, both of which just kind of passed me by, but were both fantastic. Nobody, the thriller with Bob Odenkirk, where he just does a John Wick, and it was absolutely what I needed to see late at night. It was great. And the other one, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar.
What a treat you've missed there.
Well, you say that, but now it's fresh in my mind. And it was a real treat, I have to say. I didn't know a lot about it. I knew it was, you know, Kristen Wiig playing this sort of girl that goes to Florida on holiday. And that's about as much as I knew. I didn't realize it was a kind of weird, surreal, Austin Powers-esque kind of film. Very strange, very funny.
By surprise.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, that totally made me reframe and reassess Jamie Dornan entirely when I saw him singing about pigeons and whatnot and dancing around on the sand. Yeah, really reassessed him there. And I loved Kristen Wiig doing her Dr. Evil type impression with her very pale sort of villainess. I love that film. I'm sort of jealous of you.
But now I feel that you should pass it. We should pass this on to other people who maybe have missed it, because it really did kind of come and go, I think, probably mainly because of the lockdowns and things. And I'd highly recommend it. Definitely.
Yes. It's crazy. Cool. It felt like something that you would watch at Sundance, which is what I've been doing this week, watching lots and lots of Sundance films. I have to say, it's been a cracking year this year. There's been some really great stuff. You know, there's some absolutely horrific films in a great way. Some wonderful films filmed with kindness, but overall the films I've sort of seen have been just about toxic masculinity, so I'm feeling a little bit depressed about that. But you know, there has been some lightening of the load with a film called Cha-Cha Real Smooth, which I predict will win the audience award come the end of the festival. But loads of good stuff that we can look forward to coming out for the rest of the year, or not, because that's the other thing about festivals, isn't it? You always see one and you're like, that's really good. And then it's never seen again, never sees the light of day.
Yeah. I went 10 years ago. There's still films that haven't come out.
They're on their way, though, we promise. But did you see The Princess, the Diana documentary?
I haven't seen that one yet, but I've sort of felt a bit Diana'd out after Spencer.
Yeah, I'm kind of keen to see that one because it's Ed Perkins, who was he's quite an interesting British director, and I'm quite keen to see what he does with that, even though it's a story we all know, like you say,
intimately.
Kind of too well, intimately. Yes.
So shall we move on to the films that we can see, the ones that aren't at a festival, that aren't delayed or stuck in a locker never to see the light of day? Shall we set off with Almodovar special? It's Mummy Time with this.
A mí me encanta la idea de tener un hijo contigo, Yanis, pero no sé si puedo permitírmelo ahora.
No es cuestión de si podemos permitírnoslo, es cuestión de que ya está aquí.
Si vuelve aquí no hará sino remover las cosas.
Yo no puedo perder esta oportunidad. Si dejo la compañía no volveré a trabajar nunca más.
Pues vete de gira.
So this is Parallel Mothers. Matthew, tell us what's going on in this one.
It's nothing to do with parking, which I was marvelously disappointed about. No, it's not about two pregnant women taking the driving test or anything like that. But, well, it is about two pregnant women, though. One of them is played by Almodovar regular Penelope Cruz. She plays the elder of the two mothers in question. And they both have their babies at the same time. And they bond in the maternity ward. And then their friendship continues after their babies are born. And to begin with, it's kind of lots of the usual kind of typical issues with parenthood, motherhood, and friendship. But then it kind of develops in a more sort of melodramatic, even thrillery fashion. I don't want to say too much because there's some quite big twists that come up that kind of certainly took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting at all. But it is very much in a kind of Almodovar vein in terms of that melodrama that develops. And it's kind of a two-hander as well, really. There are other significant characters, but it is mostly about these two women and the charting of their relationship along the way.
There's talk about sort of awardsy nominations coming out of this, perhaps for Penelope Cruz. What do you reckon, James? What do you think?
Yeah, she's definitely got a chance. I think she picked up an award in Venice as well when the film premiered. I mean, as Matthew said, she's an Almodovar regular, and she seems to do her best work with him again and again. I mean, she's fantastic in this. But I think that Milena Schmidt, who plays the other young teenage pregnant mother, is just as good as well. I mean, she probably won't get the love, perhaps because she's not particularly well known, but she's just as compelling in this film. And I mean, Matthew's completely right. There is lots of twists you can't really reveal in this, but there is a sort of parallel, to use a word, storyline regarding this kind of excavation of Penelope Cruz's character's sort of home village, where her great-grandfather and others were sort of killed and buried in this kind of mass grave during the Spanish Civil War. And that's a kind of storyline that kind of rumbles alongside the main storyline that Matthew was referring to. That's quite an interesting sort of counterpoint to what's going on with this very sort of rich melodrama, sort of motherhood melodrama. That's something Almodovar has, I suppose, he's touched on a little bit in other films in the past, in this kind of political backdrop to Spain. I think sort of Bad Education touched on the kind of Franco years in some ways. Yeah, I mean, this is quite a daring film from Almodovar, and Cruz is right front and centre in it.
How do you think it compared to his other movies?
That's a good question. I mean, he's in such a sort of, I mean, ever since All About My Mother, which was 1999, and that was
another mother one.
Another mother one. I mean, he loves his mother films, and that was also Penelope Cruz. I mean, he's been in such sort of rich vein of form ever since. There's hardly been a bad film since then. I think apart from that airplane comedy he did, which is quite odd, the title of which escapes me. But yeah, this is right up there, I think, with his other stuff. I think if you're a fan of his, you know, you'll definitely get something out of this.
I'm so excited. That was the plane.
That was it. I'm so excited.
Almodovar's airplane movie.
What's the title got to do with anything that happened in that film either?
This isn't quite as farcical, at least. This is this is a bit more serious. But all the twists are kind of believable as well. We can't really go into them because it just gives too much away. But I kind of completely was propelled along for the ride in this one.
I haven't seen it. I feel ashamed that I haven't, but Sundance has kept me away from this one. But I definitely will be seeing this on Friday because I love Almodovar, but also I just love the fact that he takes quite familiar subjects and manages to put his own very fresh spin on it. Like I never see anyone else approaching a subject the way he does in any of his films. There's always something that's so specifically him. So I really can't wait to see it. Would you recommend that this is a people's Friday night out cinema ticket, or is there other things this week that might be a better bet?
Yeah, I mean, it could be quite triggering maybe for some people because of the territory it covers in certain places, but yeah, I mean, it is still, you know, a very rich, involving drama, and it looks fantastic as well. I mean, the interior design, I've never seen a maternity ward look so aesthetically pleasing in a movie.
Penelope's apartment wasn't quite as sort of garish as the one in the Tilda Swinton short that he did, where that was kind of bright blues and oranges, and this one's a little more muted, but you still look at that apartment and go, God, I'd love to live there. That's just so stylish, basically. Not quite sure how she can afford it being on a photographer's wage, but, you know, maybe maybe she's, you know, snapped a few famous people in her time.
Maybe she's just, you know, sold one photo that was just an absolute belter, and that's got her that beautiful apartment.
I think, isn't she sort of photographing watches and things at some point, or various objects she's asked to do for a catalogue shoot, which is probably not the most fulfilling of work, but, you know, you sense she's got an incredible eye as a photographer.
Okay, so if you fancy looking at all of the interior design, as well as getting enthralled in a twisty, turny and involving plot, that is Parallel Mothers, and that is out in cinemas this Friday. Okay, shall we get creepy then and move away from one mummy to another with this?
There are many like you, Thomas, who seek refuge here. This is Magda. Her mother lives on the top floor. She's very ill.
Why me?
You're a builder, right? That's what you said? You try to make things bearable for them. She needs companionship.
Mother won't like it.
Magda is young, Thomas. She could become attached.
So this is Amulet. James, what's going on in Amulet? There's something up in the roof, isn't there? What's going on?
There's something in the attic, definitely. Well, I can tell you, first of all, myself and our own Jamie Graham went on set of Amulet to this dilapidated house where much of the film takes place, which was based in Wandsworth, excitingly. So we got to see it firsthand.
All the glamorous locations.
It's written and directed by Roman Aghiri, who, you know, we'll all know from films like Atonement and Suffragette and TV show The Hour. This is her first feature as a writer-director. And it centres on Thomas, played by God's Own Country star Alex. I'm going to try and get this right. Secarano? Is that right? I hope so. Sorry,
I don't
Alex.
Actually know what the actual pronunciation, but that sounded pretty good to me. I hope that is a good approximation.
Anyway, he obviously starred with Josh O'Connor in God's Own Country and then popped up in Ammonite, Francis Lee's second film. But this is the first time I've seen him in a sort of big role since then. He plays Thomas, who's a sort of a kind of refugee of a war-torn country. It's not very specific as to where. He's clearly traumatized by his past. He finds his way to this dilapidated house via Imelda Staunton's very kindly nun, who sort of pushes him towards this kind of effectively like a halfway house. And he starts doing odd jobs. He becomes a handyman for this house, which is occupied by Magda, played by Carla Jury, and her mother, played by Anna Rudin, who is kind of secreted away in the top. We're not quite sure what's wrong with her, but as in always the case when you're in a creepy house, the creepy house starts to sort of become a character in the film. Very strange things happen. There are flashbacks to his past in this kind of war zone where some pretty bad things went down as well. Gradually, it's really a sort of psychological horror that sort of leans into his own sort of past trauma and guilt. The story goes on from there.
Mm. It does include a disgusting toilet bat, which is quite alarming. I mean, that put me right off. You know, I do have a dodgy flush in my downstairs loo, and now I'm wondering if it's got a weird albino bitey bat thing stuck in it. But yeah, it is disquieting. It does lean into all those sort of horror film tropes, doesn't it? Of like creatures found and sort of stains on ceilings and scratches in the night and howling and screaming and what's going on and is anything what it seems? But it's much more than that, isn't it, Matthew? We don't obviously want to spoil it, but there's a much bigger agenda going on here as well.
Yeah, it's a real sort of slow reveal of characters. Histories and motivations. I felt like it did require a bit of patience, but it did all slot together very neatly in the end. I thought the ending was very satisfying once the kind of full picture is revealed. I mean, sometimes in horrors, when you get that, all the kind of tension leaks out and there's nothing really left to enjoy. But I felt with this that when you did get all the pieces together, it did become very satisfying. And there's a great closing scene. I really like the payoff that Garai sent us off with. But yeah, I mean, it did kind of peak for me with the bat. I mean, there was nothing really to compare with the bat. So alarming,
horrible old
creepy,
bat thing.
Great image.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of the best scares of the year, surely, already.
It's not even a scare, though, is it? It's the whole film for me sort of was like the damp throughout the house. There's mold that sort of just blooms and sort of it gets in your bones and you can smell and taste it. That was the sort of the dread that I found in this film. It wasn't necessarily terror scares. But equally, I found it really interesting that, you know, Romola's been very vocal about feminism and, you know, the fact that the film industry hasn't been skewed that way for many years and trying to take control of that and trying to create projects that do give women a voice. This one does, without, again, giving anything away. It does, doesn't it, James?
You've got her cinematographer, her production designer as well. They're both women. She wanted a sort of, I think, 50% crew. You know, she's really made this, obviously, to create this story, but also to give opportunities to women, not just in the sort of above the line kind of roles as well, but sort of right through the crew. So I think that's really impressive. And it's great to see another British female directed kind of horror genre film after St. Maud, obviously, and Censor.
Yeah.
You know, it's well, trend is the wrong word, but it's great to see. And these ladies are knocking it out of the park, you know, one by one.
Yeah. Let's talk about Imelda Staunton for a moment. I mean, we're used to seeing Imelda being a nice sort of lady who has cups of tea and stuff, which she does do in that this, but she also, you know, does some other things. This is quite the role for her, isn't it? And quite a revelation.
Yeah, it's the scariest she's been since Dolores Umbridge in the fifth Harry Potter. But yeah, she's really unnerving. Yeah, I thought she was terrific. Well, she really added to the film for me, as well as scaring the life out of me.
You could say the same for Romola. You don't see her doing these. I know she's not on screen here, but you don't see her doing these kinds of films ever. No. She's never really done a sort of genre movie. We're well used to seeing her drinking cups of tea and in corsets and things, and you know she's very good at that. But it's great to see her grasp an opportunity to do something like this, where perhaps she's not been cast very often in something like this. And now she's done a film called Earwig, which I haven't seen yet, but I think that's possibly in slightly in the same territory. So it's good to see that, and that's her acting. So it's good to see that, you know, she is moving in other directions, because you know the film industry does love to box people in and, you know, keep them doing things that they've been successful in.
Yeah. This also reminded me a bit, I don't know if it did you, you mentioned St. Maud, it reminded me of that, but also His House, the film that came out last year, that was equally about a sort of a house that had terrifying secrets, and you know, the exploration of sort of post-traumatic stress and guilt. So, yeah, I think it's a really strong directorial debut from her. And I can't wait to see what else she does. Bring on more bats, I say. Put a bat in everything. I mean, whoever did the special effect of that bat, brilliant. I mean, this is not an expensive film. And that bat is disquieting, especially when you find it in your bog. It's disgusting. So, yes, I think this is one that we could highly recommend, don't you?
Definitely.
Okay, so if you fancy a bit of bat in your bog, that is Amulet, and that is out in cinemas on Friday.
Well, they should have called it.
They should have called it Bat in the Bog, just to...
Bat in the Bog.
Bat in the Bog. I'll send her a note, Romula.
Yeah.
It's not too late to change the title.
You know, if you'd like to use this for the sequel, Bat in a Bog. Okay, shall we move on a bit to something that's much more wholesome and has no bats in it?
There he is, Clay Calloway.
Go away!
Don't you miss the music? You just need to play again.
No, I can't! I haven't even heard one of my songs in over 15 years. And for good reason.
So this is Sing 2. More of the same, James?
Well, in a way, first of all, I've got to say I absolutely love Sing and Sing 2. I just, for some reason, they completely nailed me, both of them. And I even saw, I'm going to have to explain how I saw Sing 2 before I get into what it actually is. I basically saw it at the Red Sea International Film Festival in Saudi Arabia, which was Saudi Arabia's first ever festival back in December. And they were playing it in an audience full of kids, as you would expect. And the woman presenting it asked if anyone had, you know, if this was their first ever big screen experience, and lots of them put their hands up, which was sort of quite touching, actually. The dialogue was all dubbed into Arabic, so I had English subtitles, but all of the songs were still the English language songs that we know. So it's a very strange, surreal experience, and I still thought it was great. So it managed to translate those strange language barriers. But Sing 2 basically follows quickly on from the first one. Buster Moon, the sort of impresario koala bear, voiced by Matthew McConaughey, is now looking to put on a kind of bigger show. And he winds up sort of convincing this sort of media mogul called Jimmy Crystal, voiced by Bobby Cannavale, to put on this huge space-themed spectacle. And Crystal is only convinced because Buster Moon slightly fibs and says that he can get access to Clay Calloway, who is a sort of reclusive one-time singer voiced by Bono, of all people. So as
he's a lion, as the
rehearsals sort of continue for this sort of spectacle, they have to try and lure Clay out of retirement. Of course, I did have a slight strange thing where, of course, I couldn't hear any of the original voice performances because they were in Arabic. So I never got to hear what Bono was like. Maybe Matthew can tell me if he was good.
Was he good, Matthew?
Well, I knew it was him, but I don't think I would have recognised him otherwise, you know, until he starts singing U2 songs. But yeah, he kind of he's quite well disguised. But yeah, I thought he was decent. I thought he's kind of the emotional anchor of the movie. But yeah, I thought he did a good job.
They do stick. Still haven't found what I'm looking for in there. Just in case you were unaware that there was a U2 link, yeah. Don't they?
Yeah, and there's a new Bono song as well that he does, which is pretty decent.
This has got a huge cast of singing folk. You know, we've got Reese Witherspoon's in it, trilling away. We've got Taron Egerton. We've got all sorts of people singing as animals. Isn't it just cute rather than moving? Is it like up there with an Inside Out or a Soul?
No, it's probably not that. That's very high bar, though. But I completely fell for the first one, and I was completely taken aback by it. And this one as well. Yeah, it is more of the same, really. But I enjoyed the story. I thought it was, you know, a nice expansion of the first one. You've also got Pharrell Williams voicing a kind of ice cream vendor elephant, which I quite liked. I thought he was quite good in it. It is more of the same, but I really enjoyed it.
Do you need to have a child to enjoy this, though? I mean, is this something that you're going to enjoy because you're taking a nipper, or is it something that you'd actually go to willingly and purposefully?
Good question. Yeah, I think it's probably more enjoyable with a group of children. I mean, I saw it at the PAX multimedia, and there was a kid in front of us who shouted out at one point, that character is going to die in the end.
Now, somebody needs to teach that kid cinema etiquette, apart from anything else. Like, that's not okay, kid.
No, I mean, that kind of added to the overall atmosphere. But yeah, it was a lot of fun seeing it with a bunch of kids getting really into the music. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I liked it more than the first one, I have to say. I thought it took it up a notch. Nothing to do with the fact that it has my favourite Prince song in it right at the start. That didn't win me over at all.
Let's Go Crazy.
Let's Go Crazy.
Oh, I chose right. See, I know Matthew Leyland. Despite the fact that we haven't been in an office together for many moons, I still know him well enough to know what his favourite Prince song is. Okay, so that is Sing 2. And if you fancy a little bit of that, it is out in cinemas on Friday and will probably be out for the whole of half term as it rolls around in February. Shall we move on then to some more family entertainment? This is a father-daughter show now.
My father lusted after freedom. The kind of freedom most free people never experience.
The suspect has been identified as John Bogle, the second largest counterfeiter in U.S. history. Bogle printed over $22 million.
He came and went from our lives. He always made me feel like part of a bigger world. I'll be on the reaches.
Ready? Go! So this is Flag Day, and this is Sean Penn and his daughter Dylan. And what are they up to, Matthew?
Well, what are they up to? Well, it's directed by Sean Penn, and he stars as well. It's based on a true story by Jennifer Vogel, which is all about her father, who was a con artist, basically. He was involved in all sorts of dodgy things, but mostly to do with counterfeit money. It follows their very difficult journey together through life. We see her as a young girl, and then we see her as the older Jennifer, is played by Dylan Penn. And their relationship is very fractious, never really sort of settles into anything kind of harmonious. Lots of mistakes are made, especially on his part. He's always kind of coming up with new schemes, new scams, getting himself deeper and deeper into trouble. And it kind of eventually heads towards a tragic end, basically. And it's so it's kind of this big real life melodrama, and it's kind of it reminded me a little bit of Honey Boy, but not as well done, I would say, to put it mildly.
Sean Penn keeps trying to make films. Some are more successful than others. James, do you think this is more successful than his previous efforts?
Well, obviously, the last film he did was The Last Face, which was completely risible and disappeared without trace, effectively. So this feels like a masterpiece by comparison to that. I mean, it's not really on the level of The Pledge or Into the Wild, which are probably his two greatest works as a director, but I enjoyed it. It was it spans from the mid 70s to sort of the early 90s, but it has that vibe of those kind of films that came out of the 70s that, you know, Penn would have grown up on, of course. And I think he does that really well. The photography is really, really nice. It also features Hopper Penn, his son, so it's a real family affair. He's only in a couple of scenes, but it's kind of remarkable how much he looks like Sean, or at least a younger Sean. And then obviously Dylan is great in the lead as well. I think she's really powerful. She has some great scenes with her father as she sort of gradually comes to realize what a sort of scoundrel he is, but he's her father, and what can she do? It's a really interesting back and forth between them across this film. It's not a life-changing Sean Penn movie. It's not, you know, Mystic River or 21 Grams, but it's still a decent piece of work, I think.
Perfectly decent, not shameful.
No, definitely not shameful.
Matthew, would you recommend people go and see this one this week? Is there anything particular about it that you'd recommend?
I think if you really, really like Sean Penn and Sean Penn's family, then yeah, I'd recommend it. But I think there are stronger films out there. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it above Parallel Mothers. I thought the ending was really misjudged. There's a scene at the end, I thought they really mucked up. I won't go into details, but that's kind of left a bad taste for me. And I really struggled to engage with those characters, despite the strength of the performances. I mean, he was just so annoying.
Obviously, that, you know, you're watching a story about a father and daughter played by a real father and daughter. Do you think that adds to it, or is it sort of weirdly distracting in a stunt casting fashion?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit distracting. Yeah, you can't help thinking, oh, are there any parallels here? How do they kind of act? Do they act this way in real life?
There is a great scene where they're sitting in a diner and he's sort of telling her not to do drugs and like, oh, I'm really disappointed in you. And then she starts saying, well, you know, I've seen you rolling joints and I remember seeing you do lines when I was a child. And he sort of denies all this. But while I would not suggest that Sean Penn and Dylan Penn have ever had this exact conversation before, you do wonder what that kind of back and forth of a father and his teenage daughter might have been like 15 years ago. You know, did he ever have those types of conversations with Dylan? And yeah, in a way that is slightly distracting in the fact that I was
you
then
were wondering,
that
whilst you were
more about them than I was about the characters. But I'm not in any way suggesting they've ever had that conversation, but I guess it pops in your mind.
Indeed. Okay, so that is Flag Day, and that is also at cinemas this Friday if you fancy a bit of Penn times two action. Moving on then to our final film, and it's time to go, you know, like, just relax, get slow. It's this. So this is Taming the Garden, Matthew, not about waxing service. What is this about?
It's about a big tree. The tree is the main character in this film. This tree from Georgia, which is basically spends the whole film being relocated to the grounds of this former prime minister, who's also a huge billionaire. It's basically is transported all the way to his mansion. And so we watch this journey and then we see and the people who are engaged in who live near the tree and who are responsible for transporting the tree. We kind of hear from them along the way. And it's a very sort of like completely observational documentary. It's totally unobtrusive. There's no voiceover. There's no captions. It really is just like completely self-effacing camera work the whole way along. The tree is kind of this huge presence in all throughout the whole film. You know, we see it being transported on a barge. We see it going through a forest. So yeah, it's kind of unique in that way. It's also very slow burning as well.
I'm going to say unique is sometimes a sort of double-edged sort of word to use. Are you using unique in a good way or a bad way?
I'm not going to lie. It was a bit of a struggle to get through. I mean, it's got some incredible visuals. I mean, just the sight of this tree sort of floating on water on this barge, it's kind of quite surreal. And it does remind you sometimes of Fitzcarraldo, you know, with the Werner Herzog film about moving that boat through the jungle. It reminded me of that.
Steamboat over a hill.
Yeah. It is a bit frustrating that you do feel a little bit remote from the people who are interviewed. And I felt like it needed more context as well to really kind of to engage you. But yeah, I mean, from the visuals alone, it's pretty striking.
Unique for you, James?
Yeah, again, it's that euphemistic use of the word unique. I'm kind of with Matthew on that. Talk about slow cinema. This is set in treacle, basically. And that's fine. But I think anyone that wants to see this, go to the cinema to see it. Don't watch it at home, you know, on a digital stream, because you really need to sort of absorb yourself in this. And I personally found that quite difficult, you know, watching it at home. But and the images are spectacular, and I think you will get something from seeing them on a big screen. But no, I completely agree about the sort of lack of context. It really could have just guided you a little bit more. I mean, there aren't even really sort of interviews. It's just sort of catching snatches of, of dialogue where they sort of talk about, well, they're not even sure why this tree is sort of being moved. And I mean, it is fascinating on a level of, you know, how power and money can quite literally can buy you anything, it appears, including giant trees that they'll transport, you know, all across this country. But it wasn't a particularly compelling documentary, I have to put it that way.
I thought it was a really great story, but just the handling of it, I would like to have seen it done, well, you know, maybe in a fictional way or in a more perhaps conventional documentary way. I felt that would have been more engaging.
I mean, the thing is with these films, you know, I agree with both of you, it's incredibly soporific and sort of hypnotic in a way. But, you know, we saw a film recently like this in Cow, Andrea Arnold's film, which is sort of following a cow with no real narrative attached to it, and the idea being that you attach your own meaning to it. You're just left to take from it what you want and divine meaning from it in whatever way you see. So you could look at this, as James said, as a study of power and the disgusting levels of wealth in a country where other people are, you know, earning a few bits of money just to dig up a tree for somebody who literally wants a Georgian tree in their new pad. It could be an ecological message you're getting from it, or it could be a sort of weird nature, sort of into the earth type thing you're getting from it. So I guess from that point of view, it's each to their own, isn't it? But I found it kind of frustrating not to be guided more on it. But if you would like to watch some slow cinema, it's in cinemas this Friday. Yeah, I think probably a coffee required before you go in to watch that one. Because if you're sitting in the dark in a reclining seat with a glass of wine, very likely you could nod off. Okay,
but if you do, you're not going to miss anything. So
no, yeah, that tree is still going to be rumbling along. Just it's on a land mover, it's on a barge, it's still just rumbling along, quivering slightly wherever it is. Delightful. Okay, so shall we move on then? I'm ready for my alternative line reading if you are. So there is a link to the line I'm going to do today to another film, another filmmaker in this week. Are you ready? I'm going to do this in the style of a bossy schoolgirl. I've been thinking about this, Mr. Hand. I'm here and you're here. Doesn't that make it our time? Certainly there's nothing wrong with a little feast on our time.
It's Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Sean Penn.
It's Spicoli. Sean Penn as Spicoli. Yeah. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. A great film. And Sean Penn is amazing in that. What a mullet.
Yeah. One of the best.
And it sounds like this.
I've been thinking about this, Mr. Han. If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time? Certainly there's nothing wrong with a little feast on our time.
So that's it for this week. It's not the greatest week, but what would be your film of the week, James?
It has to be Parallel Mothers, I think. Although with a soft spot for Sing 2, especially if you see it in Arabic.
With children who have never seen a big screen again before.
Okay. Exactly.
Quite a difficult sort of set of circumstances to sort, but good. Matthew, your film of the week?
I'm going to go for Sing 2, but I did very much enjoy Parallel Mothers and Amulet, both highly recommended.
I'm going to go for Amulet. I think it's disquieting and intriguing, and we should support female directors and filmmakers. And so Amulet is my choice. All right, before we go, it's time for a reader's question. Are you ready for this? What cinema mum would you like to mother you? Now, that could go in a sexual fashion, couldn't it? Or it could
I really didn't think that could go in a sexual fashion.
Well, you know, it could be
like a, you know, Jennifer Coolidge in American Pie. You could go that mother, or you could go badass mother, or you could just go delightful, loving mother. What are you doing, Matthew? What are you going for?
Alien Queen from Aliens.
You want that as your mother? It's going to get soggy.
Yeah, no one's going to mess with you. She's got your back.
But you're going to get drooled on a lot.
Well, yeah, you will, but...
You don't mind being damp and in space.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she'd be very loving, wouldn't she? She's super protective.
Yes,
she's true. She's the badass of all badasses. I mean, come on.
Okay, that's a lovely image. Who are you being cuddled by, James?
Well, I did go for another alien-themed film, E.T. I went for Elliot's mother, who's... She is wholesome and loving and, you know, she's a single mum. She looks after the family. I just thought, yeah, I'd like her as my mum.
She is a lovely mum. I'm going to go Sarah Connor because she is going to battle to the death for you. And she's just a total badass. I love her. I think she's amazing. But I do love Jennifer Coolidge in American Pie. I love the way Jennifer Coolidge talks. She's like, are you going to eat that pie, you dumbass? I can't even do her. She's brilliant, though.
That was pretty good.
That was good.
It's uncanny.
Well, there you go. So that's my
mother.
And in
Promising Young Woman as well. She's a lovely mum in Promising Young Woman.
She is a lovely mum in that, isn't she? I'd forgotten she's in that. She's not remotely funny, which I liked as well. No. She's just delightful. Okay. Yeah. Jennifer Coolidge, she's the one. Please be my mum, Jennifer, if you're listening. Okay, on that note, shall we say goodbye and retire? And we'll see what we've got next week on Inside Total Film. So please come back and find out what we'll be talking about next week. And for now, it is goodbye from all of us. So say goodbye, James.
Bye.
Say goodbye, Matthew.
Ta-ta.
Bye.
I got some scotch.
Single malt.
Aged 18 years. The way I like it.
With a deadly horizon, oh, I swear I saw a young boy down in the gutter. He was starting to foam in the heat. Oh, baby, you're the only thing in this whole world that's good and good and right. And wherever you are and wherever you go, there's always gonna be some light. But I gotta get out, I gotta break it out now. Make the most of our one night together. When it's over, you know we'll both be so